Today is September 30th, 2015, and this is episode number 326 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief at TMO.
And I am Adam Christensen, host of the MacCast and owner of a much smaller iPhone. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
Well, Adam, thank you for being on the show this week. Jeff is out and about doing a presentation somewhere.
Somewhere in the ether.
Somewhere, yeah. I think he's actually somewhere in Colorado even.
Oh, okay. So you didn't go too far.
No, I don't think he went too far, but he was going to be gone all day. Anyway, glad to have you here, even though you have a smaller iPhone. Admittedly, if I'd known that you had a smaller iPhone, I don't know that
you would invite me on.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not walking lopsided anymore, so I think it's a benefit.
Oh, well, sweet. So I take it you went from a 6 Plus to a 6S?
6S, and I love it. I couldn't be happier.
Okay. I did not know that, so why don't we just start there?
You could take a bite into that?
Yeah, why are you so happy about it?
Got to rewind a little bit. When the phone came out, I had been on my podcast for a long, long time. Of course, like many iPhone owners, bagging on the large phones. I always thought they were ridiculous. And we always had the excuse that Apple didn't make a big one because they were just dumb.
And right. So you were an Apple apologist.
Yeah, I was an Apple apologist.
Okay, all right.
To the phone. And so I kind of had when Apple announced it, I went, okay, this is the way it's going. Obviously, this is something consumers want. People have told me they're great. I love my huge gigantophone. And I said, you know what? I will go for it this time. I will try it. I will live a year in the shoes of a large phone owner and try and get it.
Okay, so, seriously, that's like taking one for the team.
Well, I really wanted to know. I wanted to know the experience, and I wanted to be able to kind of talk about it in a real way.
Sure.
You know, because obviously, you know, they've been hugely popular. I think they were more popular. The 6S Plus was more popular than the 6S this go around, from a lot of the reports I've been reading, and just based on how things were selling. Split.
I'd be
selling out.
If that was the case. You think that's the case? I haven't seen that. You think that's the case?
It sold out quicker. So either that, or they're having more production issues with the larger ones. They were definitely sold out.
That's meaningless.
True.
I mean, that's meaningless in determining from an outside perspective which one is selling better.
Right.
It may be right. I mean, it could mean.
Yes, I'm speculating.
Anything. Yeah, okay, all right, sorry.
Totally agreed.
I'll stop being a jerk.
No, you have a valid point. I am speculating. The point is there were a lot of people who apparently liked large phones, and it seemed like one of the reasons Apple did it was because consumers were saying, we want a big one. So there was obviously people that live in that camp. And so I really wanted to know what it was like, and wanted to just also, I think in the back of my mind, confirm to myself that everything I was saying was true. So maybe I went into
That's great. I respect the crap out of that, man. You were willing to test your own viewpoint, man. That's most of us aren't willing to do that. Most of us aren't willing to do that. So I respect that.
Right. Right. And, you know, and there were some other technical advantages. I wanted to try things out, like the optical image stabilization on the camera, and see if that was a thing that I cared about or not. So, you know, because a lot of people said, well, and I kind of knew after the first week or two that I really didn't like it. And so a lot of people were like, why don't you just return it? Because you can return it and get another one. I said, no, I really want to give this. I did want to give it a fair shake.
Yeah. Somehow really I didn't know any of this, by the way. I had no idea that you were engaged in this. Despite the fact that we talk in the morning 5 days a week,
yeah,
I didn't realize that you were on a year long experiment. I mean, I find that fascinating. It's cool.
Yeah, it was fun, but not fun at the same time. So I learned that there were things I did like it having a larger screen. You know, I am aging. I wear glasses, and so it just being a little bit bigger was kind of nice. Having touch points that are a little bit, you know, slightly larger, which I'm struggling with now, actually going back down to the smaller size. you know, things are just a little bit smaller. But again, it just feels more comfortable. I said when I got the new 6S, it felt like going back to that comfortable old pair of shoes after being in some sort of awkward pair for a while.
Which is funny because the 6S and the 6 before it are so much bigger than the 5.
Yeah.
And now I went to the 6. I was not interested in as you call it, the Gigantophone, and just in the spirit of annoying Jeff, I'll call it a phablet. I was not interested in that. Now, and there are a couple of reasons for that. One of which is that I do so much reading, and I do so much on my iPad, my iPad Air.
Yeah, me too.
Full size iPad Air. Well, it's not full size anymore, is it? But I do so much on that device. I am very comfortable having it with me wherever I go.
Yeah.
If I was not comfortable having it with me wherever I go, or maybe even if I would prefer the iPad Mini, and I am also aging and have my own eyesight issues, maybe I would have gone with the 6 Plus, but I didn't. I went with the 6, and at first found it to feel so much larger because I was comparing it to the 5.
Right.
But very quickly, it felt normal. And, yeah. and by the way, I was also one of those apologists who said that the large phones were, you know, pointless, so that I wanted to be able to, I bought into Phil Schiller's thing about doing everything with one thumb.
Oh, that has been the biggest benefit. I can reach everything with one hand now. Like, again, I guess I should say. And that has been the biggest benefit, I think, about going back.
Yeah,
I really didn't realize how much I missed that until I could do it again.
I don't know that I can do everything with one hand, but I can do almost everything with one. I never use reachability, for instance.
Oh God, no! That was a poor excuse of a compromise.
I don't know. I thought it was clever. You didn't like it?
It in theory, I liked the idea. In practice, it was never practical.
Hmm.
At least for me. And then most of the time, I'd end up activating it when I didn't want to, and then it was like, how do I get this thing back up? Oh yeah, that's how you do it. But I think I'm a lot like you. I tried the iPad Mini and realized that was like this weird compromise the other way. So I have learned about myself that I really prefer having the right sized device for sort of the right applications.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess that's where I am too. And, you know, to be honest, though, I used, before the iPad came out, so from what, 2007 to 2010, I was obsessively on my iPhone. And when I got the first iPad,
mm-hmm.
I could probably live life just fine. Well, of course, everyone could live life with the feature phone just fine. I mean, feature phone is still a luxury, quite frankly, but whatever.
Yeah.
My point is that if I had a feature phone, I could probably live with just my iPad.
I
use my iPhone.
Right.
I certainly use my iPhone when I'm out and about. But I use my iPad when I'm out and about a lot too. I don't know why I'm hedging. I use my iPad more than I use my iPhone at this point.
Yeah. Well, my new experiment, at least for a month or two, is going to see if I can convert my MacBook Pro into a desktop by getting an iPad Pro.
To a desktop.
Yep.
So explain that, because I'm not following that number.
My MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
So normally when I go out, I will take my iPhone, my iPad, and my MacBook Pro with me.
You're going out to work, I assume.
Yeah, when I'm going out to work remotely, if I'm not going to be sitting at my desk, you know, in my office.
Right.
And the reason I do that is because there's certain tasks that I like to do on each device. And specifically with the MacBook Pro, it's generally taking notes or anything that I have to do with typing.
A lot of typing, right?
Yeah, a lot of typing.
Because I'm comfortable typing on my iPad. And I'm comfortable typing on my iPhone.
Yeah,
if I have a lot of typing to do.
Exactly.
I want to do it on a computer.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I want to see. It's going to be an interesting experiment, because I want to see if maybe even I can get to a point with that device where it it works as my notebook and my iPad sort of thing. But I don't know.
Get the keyboard with it.
I'm going the full package, so it's got to have the keyboard. Yeah, and the point is will I be able to get down to just carrying an iPhone and an iPad Pro when I'm mobile? And that I don't know. That's going to be really interesting.
Try that for a year.
No, I'm not going to try that for a year. I am going to give it a. I promised my audience I'm going to give it a month. When I get it for the first month, I will not leave the house with the MacBook Pro.
How about with your iPad Air?
That's going to be a tougher one. I'd like to try. I might try a week and see how that goes.
Yeah, it seems like you should try longer than a week if you're going to try it at all.
It just seems too big. Like it might be too big. Yeah, I don't know. Should I commit to it now? The question is, should I commit to it now or wait till I actually have it? I probably should commit to it now because otherwise I might chicken out.
You should commit to it ahead of time for sure. Actually, yeah. Commit to it right now on this show. Let's do it.
I'll do it.
All right. Woo! That's awesome.
So I will, the iPad Air and the MacBook Pro stay at home, and I will only, when I'm mobile, have... For 1 month.
Wow.
For 30 days.
For 30 days. All right, man, dude, I cannot wait to hear that result.
Hey, if Federico Vici can do it, right, I can, right?
Sure. So the interesting thing there is that one of the reasons why I like the Air so much, the iPad Mini is, I'm sure, a fine device.
It is. It's a great little device.
And considering the fact that I find my iPhone 6 and now my 6S usable, I'm sure I would find the Mini usable. The thing I like about the Air, quite frankly, is it's book-sized.
Yep.
Hardback book-sized.
It's great for reading.
And I read a lot. I've been using. I know you've heard me talk about this in meetings. When I'm doing read through edits on the novel that I'm working on, I do it on my iPad because it replicates the reading experience, and I find that I edit differently as a reader. In reading, how am I trying to say this? I edit differently when I'm in reading mode than I do when I'm in writing mode. When I'm in writing mode, obviously, is when I'm sitting with a computer either on my lap or at my desktop, right?
Right.
And I've found that I find different things in reader mode, and I find more things when I'm in reader mode. So I do that with my iPad, and I do my if I'm reading for another fiction author, I will do that reading on an iPad also, and I, you know, just make notes right in iBooks, and then end up transferring them all to a Word document. And I do my reading for enjoyment, my entertainment reading. I do all of that on an iPad Air. So that informs, that greatly informs why I am so willing to carry that around, why I'm so comfortable carrying that around.
Right.
And obviously playing on an iPad Pro, both from a, you know, any kind of, I can't draw my way out of a wet paper bag, but pretending to do art, playing games, any kind of, like, even using maps. There's a lot of things I would love to do on a Pro, but I don't think it would be the best reading environment.
No, I don't get that it would be either.
And that's the thing that...
unless you're going to go, like, I don't know, maybe if someone builds an app that's, like, two-up, like an old traditional newspaper? You know, like a...
Yeah, but that's not book-sized. Why bother? Maybe. I mean, I haven't tried it yet, obviously. You know, I don't want to be too reactionary here.
But a book is—I mean, a book is two up. I mean, you can have a book. You have a left and a right page, right?
I don't. I personally read in portrait mode.
No, I know, but I mean, I'm talking about in a pulp, you know, book, an actual
book. Right?
Right. So if you're going to more replicate that experience,
the book folds up, and I can carry it around.
It's not that compact. Yeah, no, I get the point. Yeah. And I mean, there's not a lot of advantage to that, really, if you think about it, right? You can only be reading one page at a time anyway.
That's entirely
most
true.
People.
Actually, there's for most people, that's not exactly true, because especially if you're looking at those of us who are old enough to have been raised on physical books, where we're used to reading in that format, the
right.
not having to take the time to turn half the pages,
right,
and just being able to have everything flow is. There's probably a comforting experience aspect to that. Personally, I'm very comfortable turning each page,
right.
And I don't even think about it. But I don't know. Anyway, the point is that I don't think the iPad Pro could be my take it everywhere device.
No.
So I'm going to, but, and you're not actually trying, you're not going to be experimenting with it as a take it everywhere device. You're going to be experimenting with it as your work device.
Correct. My main, I'm mobile getting work done device.
Right. So if you were going to a coffee shop just to read, you would be free to not take your iPad Pro.
I wouldn't even want to. And I don't do that now.
No, so I'm talking about your 30-day commitment.
Yeah, and the 30-day commitment, you know, the point is, yeah, any place that I would be taking the MacBook Pro to work is where I'm going to replace that.
Got it.
Yeah, absolutely. Since we were talking about reading, can I quickly spin us in another direction that may get us on another topic?
Dude, this is the Apple context machine. Yes.
So reading on an iPad, something I've been thinking about a lot recently because I've been using the feature more, specifically for reading on my iPad, is Safari's reader mode.
Okay.
And it got me thinking about this whole, you know, like ad blocking sort of thing too, and the debate there. We've had the ability to sort of filter out ads in a great way using that reader feature, in my opinion. Because one, you hit the web page, so you're still going to hit the ads, so the content providers are still going to get their credit, but then you hit the reader button and you get a nice clean reading view of the content that's on that web page that's unblocked. And that seems like such a nicer way to go, and I've been using that feature a lot more, and I always forget about it, you know, those three little lines that are up in the browser, clicking on those and just reading through that. And I think it's an underappreciated feature in Safari.
Yeah.
I mean, people don't talk about it, or I don't get people who come up to me and say they use it, and I've been using it more, and it's a great reading experience for web content.
I've got a lot of baggage there because I'm so adamant on the idea that if you're viewing content that is being paid for with ads, you need to allow the ads to be shown.
Right.
And
the page still loads with the ads in place.
The page loads, yeah, but making them go away, I hear you.
And then it comes back. I don't know. You don't like that compromise?
I respect the reality that it is a compromise. I'm only talking about my. I'm not really capable of doing it because I feel so strongly about the principal aspect of it, and I'm way outside the bell curve on that. I'm way out.
Yeah.
I know that I've alienated readers and listeners in the past by talking about this particular subject, and quite frankly, I'm okay with that because it is something I care deeply about.
Of course.
But I do respect the fact that it's compromise.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to go maybe deep into that debate because I'm sure it's been done already.
Yeah, I don't think Jeff and I have talked about that too much on this show. I think Dave and I have talked about it more on TDO.
Right.
And we've written about it many times over the years. Right. And it turns out that people don't like being called thieves when they steal content. People get really bent out of shape. People who steal content get really bent out of shape when they're called a thief.
Oh, so let's define stealing content,
If you block my ads, you're stealing my content, unless I give you an alternate method of paying.
What if I use an RSS reader and things like Pocket or Instapaper readability.
That treads that line. I'm not really too keen. I'm not really too keen on anybody being able to take my content, the material that I work to produce, and formatting it the way they want it formatted.
Right.
Especially if they're going to make a profit off of it. Like these content blockers who are actually taking money on the side to allow ads through. Oh my.
Oh yeah.
That is so philosophically offensive. it depends on which side you want to argue that. I mean, the reality is that's downright extortion. It's absolutely extortion. But what I was talking about is the disgusting side of that, where they get to make money blocking my money.
Right. Yeah.
That is so freaking offensive. It is beyond me. But the other side is, you know, Dave Hamilton, my business partner at the Mac Observer and the co-host of the Mac Geek Gab and many other things. He's much more progressive on this stuff. And he is especially more progressive on the content blockers. And here's the reality. We can't stuff this genie back into the bottle, and which is what I've been, you know, wrestling with internally. So we have to find new ways to make revenue. Content blockers are here.
Well, the other thing is, I think it brings up the good part that I'm seeing come out of this is it has brought up the conversation, and the general gist of most of the like smart conversation around this that I've been seeing is that technology has moved us to a place with how ads are presented specifically on the web that ended up really, really bad because of a myriad of reasons. But, you know, getting to this point where we've got flashing things and things popping up all over the place and autoplay video and interstitial videos.
And audio too, autoplay audio, both.
Autoplay audio. You know, we got to all this really egregious place where I think that's why content blockers are so popular right now. It's just like people aren't, it's not that people are fed up with ads or they don't recognize that people who make content need to get paid. I'm talking about, I think, the majority of people. I think there's people out there that
free. Haven't been using these products.
Correct.
And the people where I get really, really pissy is with people telling me that they shouldn't have to view ads to see my content. They are entitled to my content.
Yeah.
That's what philosophically offends me and puts me way over the edge, and I'm doing my best to stay calm even thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, sorry, I don't want to cut you off. Go ahead.
Good.
I was going to come from you know, I guess where I'm sort of feeling like this is a good thing is because, you know, I do the programming for the Mac Observer and I deal with the code, and I've seen the kinds of stuff that goes on with the trackers and the code and the JavaScript, and it bloats up the website. It slows page loads, and it's been going on for years and years, and it keeps getting piled on and piled on as, you know, we get more and more partners, or not we specifically, but the proverbial we, right? As people get more and more partners, and it has gotten out of hand. It really has gotten out of hand. And so I really feel like rise of this conversation.
We are very aggressive in policing that stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And we're much more aggressive than the web at large.
Oh, absolutely.
And we are also very aggressive, thanks to our partners at Backbeat Media, which is another Dave Hamilton company. But thanks to our partners there, we are also very aggressive in what we put on the page. What we don't put on the page, you know, we don't put movies. Like, you know, when an ad slips through, like we have occasionally had video ads or some kind of animation that slips through, and it's always a remnant ad,
right?
You know, it's something with Google or another remnant network, and
where
and
the automated stuff comes into play.
It's where the right, and we kill those the moment we see them.
But that takes us being very, very proactive and being on top of that stuff and being selective and being careful. The problem is that most of these things like Google and a lot of these services, they've made it where it's just, oh, just sign up for this thing and just drop this code in there and you're done and you're making money.
Yeah, they don't care as long as they get to track us and make us the product.
Right.
Google doesn't care.
Right.
Well, and so, you know, here's the thing. You were right that the overreaching of both advertisers and some publishers, and I honestly feel like we're the good guys there, that the Mac Observer has been the good guys on this front from the get-go. We've been publishing for 18 years.
Right.
And we have been the people that are walking that balance between providing enough advertising to pay for the content without going overboard.
Sure.
And I realize that most other folks, or a lot of other folks at the very least, are not doing that. And here's the deal. In my opinion, when a publisher is cramming too much advertising down your throat, you have the right to not consume that content. That's the answer, is that you don't consume the content. You don't go to that publisher.
You don't support the behavior.
Yeah, you don't support the behavior by not consuming it. Where I get tense is people that say, well, this person is doing something I don't like, so I'm just going to steal it.
Right.
So I want to read it and I don't want to have to pay that price. And that is where I have gotten tense. But again, at this point, this doesn't matter. My attitude about this doesn't matter. Content blockers are here to stay. Things like Instapaper are here to stay.
Right.
Which means that we as publishers have to find different ways to monetize our content so that we can stay in business. And that's the thing. You know, people are... What this is going to do is this is going to drive more native advertising and more advertising that's not only the native advertising, by the way, is essentially an advertisement that is being presented as content. Native advertising is what the advertising industry likes to call it because it sounds better.
Oh, God, I hope not.
What do you mean?
That we get more of that
stuff. Well, we will absolutely get more of that.
Ugh.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course we will.
Yeah, that's worse.
I mean, it's like, you know, it's like on TV or the movies where TV in particular, where in order to combat people who skip ads,
right,
you have more and more product placement that's being paid for by advertisers in a show. I mean, the you can't get something for nothing. When everybody blocks ads,
right? No, I
get it.
The
content either goes away, or they find new ways to make money. And when they're going to find new ways to make money, it's going to be things that you can't block, or at least you can't block for now.
I already do this, right? Is just like you were saying. I mean, you need to get to the point where if there's people doing that, then I will just stop consuming that content because it's not worth it.
Well, so. The native advertising is coming. I mean, it's already here. BuzzFeed, for instance, most of their revenue comes from native advertising. And it will come. I mean, you know, the Mac Observer does a little bit of native advertising. We do our deals, our daily deals. You know, once a day, we link to one of the great deals that Stack Social, and I mean it when I say great, that Stack Social puts together for us and for other websites as well. And we list it as a deal. We're not hiding the fact that it's a deal, but native advertising is going to come to TMO. Native advertising is already in our podcasts. Whenever we do a spot where we talk about a sponsor, that is native advertising. You know, Paul Harvey was doing this decades ago. You know, we're coming back to that model.
But are you talking about content endorsed advertising, or are you talking about, you know, paid blog posts and
paid blog posts are one thing. I'm actually talking more about Yeah, paid blog posts are a form of native advertising, and we're going to see more of that.
Yeah.
We're already, that's where BuzzFeed already makes its money.
I mean, my example is, you know, like Yahoo News, which I use Yahoo as like my homepage since Google got rid of their Google page thing or whatever. And I'm about to stop using that too, because the way they present the news, every other article is some sort of sponsored article. And yes, it says sponsored, but half the time you don't really notice it. And now I'm starting to understand how they do the formatting a little bit different, but it's really confusing. And to me, it mucks up the content.
Well, see, that's the thing. You can't get something for nothing. And this is going to be the response to people blocking ads. You know, people are like so satisfied with themselves about blocking ads and you know, I shouldn't have to be dealing with those ads and my page loads are too slow and all that stuff. And now we're solving that. But there's going to be a solution to the content, or that content will go away.
Well, I think there's better, more creative solutions than some of that stuff. Well, like some of it, I mean, like the deals thing that you mentioned, I mean, that's clearly identified as it's a deal. It's a thing. It's not, you know, it's not content.
I agree, which is why I've been comfortable doing them for, you know, we've been doing them for 2 or 3 years now.
But I mean, a lot of it is, you know, just having static, more relevant, you know, not this dumb automated track you everywhere kind of advertising.
Well, and that's one of the beautiful things about what Apple is doing is Apple is giving is mainstreaming the tools to combat the Google, Facebook, and to a lesser extent Yahoo model of making us the product.
Yeah,
and I am absolutely delighted with that, and it's part and parcel of the quote-unquote content blocking. You know, it's part and parcel with blocking the ads. And I'm very glad to see pushback there. And I'll be honest, as a publisher, I am happy to make that trade-off. I am happy to have to find new ways to monetize TMO that works for people, that works for our readers, and at the same time also allows our readers not to be tracked by the advertisers, by those folks who want to profit from our lives. You know, Jeff and I have talked for hours on the Apple Context Machine about the Google model and the Facebook model, and about how we don't like it. So, you know, I'll take it. And the biggest thing is this: I realize that everybody who's angry that I called him a thief for stealing our content by blocking ads has already turned off this podcast. But this genie will not be stuffed back into the bottle. And this is the new reality. And it's up to us to find ways to adapt. And if we can't find ways to adapt, if we can't find ways to monetize our content, then we deserve to go out of business.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, that I think that would be on us. But so let me ask you this. What's your thought on related to this? Because I've never asked you about this, Apple News.
We have the opportunity to be part of Apple News,
right?
So if we choose to be part of that opportunity, it's on us the way it's being presented, which is ad free, or mostly ad free. But we'll probably have a way of being able to do that too. Of getting some kind of advertiser message. In content is there. I mean, see, that's the thing. I guess the real answer to your question is that essentially participating in Apple News is a choice that we can make as a publisher.
Right. And I guess we get to decide. I mean, to a lot of people, though, I mean, they look at that and they go, well, you know, they grabbed all these feeds and they stuck them in there. And it's sort of an opt-out sort of scenario, isn't it?
Well, you have to format your content for Apple News. There's an Apple News API essentially.
Right.
So if you're not doing that, I don't think Apple's going to be scraping up your content because it's not being formatted.
Yeah, I need to do more research.
I could be missing something on this too.
Yeah. I know you can. They have a whole platform, and I think when you go into their platform, then you have opportunities to monetize your content as well through iAds. But again, I think Apple's taking a cut.
Yeah, Apple's, which is fine. Every advertising network takes a cut. I mean,
right,
you know,
but you're not
going
to be able to
do
your own deal and load it into Apple News. I mean, it's the same thing they've done.
Yeah, honestly, I'm fine with that. As a publisher, I'm fine with that. I haven't had that particular conversation with Dave yet. I don't know his feelings on it. But I'm fine with that because, you know, Apple is providing this particular platform, and they're not tracking our readers. They're not making our readers the product, which is, you know, which is great in my opinion. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's a slippery slope. It probably goes into something else that we were going to, you know, I think might be talking about.
Which is?
The whole streaming and app purchase stuff. I mean, to me, it's along the same lines.
Well.
Right?
No. I don't think so at all. We could segue to that. You want to segue to that?
Yeah, let's talk about that. Because I'm curious to get your take on, well, I know a little bit from your piece, but I have some questions for you about this. I think I agree with most of the things you comment on, but I want to fill people in on what the gist of the story is.
Sure, why not? So we got a little piece of news last week, I think it was, that might have been Monday. May actually only been. Anyway, the point is this. The FCC is, or the FTC, is it the FTC or the FCC?
Yeah, TC.
Thank you, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, is stepping up its investigation into Apple's in-app purchase policies, in particular the way they affect streaming music competitors. And this is not, Apple hasn't been charged with anything yet.
Right.
Or sued, which is how the FTC works, by the way. The FTC can do an investigation. It can then ask for changes. And if a company doesn't do what it wants, or if they just think that they need to, they will then sue that company for breaking whatever particular regulation that the FTC is responsible for overseeing. So that's how they work. And Apple hasn't been charged. Apple hasn't been sued. There's just simply an investigation going on. And the issue is this. Apple takes 30%. Of in-app purchases. Most in-app purchases, at the very least.
Right.
And when it comes to streaming content providers, particularly, you know, Pandora, Spotify, iHeartRadio, all the various services, Apple will not allow them to sell subscriptions from within the app outside of Apple's in-app purchase system.
Correct.
Which means that those companies either have to lose 30% to Apple, not sell subscriptions through the app at all. And of course, we all know that Apple customers are the most valuable customers on the planet, or charge more to compensate. Yeah, the irony being, by the way, that by charging 30% more, they're still not covering the money they lose.
Right.
Because there's, you know, still a couple of percentage points that are being eaten in the 30% increase. But that's beside the point. And this really hasn't been too much of an issue up until the launch of Apple Music, because all of the competitors in the streaming music space were on the same page, on the same playing field. But now Apple Music is on the scene, and it is not on the same playing field, because, you know, either Apple doesn't charge itself the 30%, or it doesn't matter because the 30% goes back to it.
Sure.
So for take a $9.99 streaming service, Spotify has to either accept the fact that they're going to get $7 for it or charge $13 for it and still get less than $9.99. But again, that's beside the point.
Right, right.
And whereas Apple can charge $9.99.
So it's anti-competitive.
It is unfair. The thing is this. What Apple is doing may or may not be illegal. Apple doesn't have a monopoly in smartphones. It doesn't have a monopoly on app sales. And in this particular case, customers can go and make their subscription purchase outside the app, and then plug in those credentials inside the app.
Right.
So it's not necessarily clear. I don't know. I mean, well, If it was outright illegal, we would have already had a lawsuit. So I don't know that it's illegal yet, but it's incredibly unfair. And because it is so unfair, I think that Apple's going to need to change it.
Do you think if someone really likes a particular service, though, that's even a barrier?
For some people, it's going to be a barrier.
I have a hard time buying that.
Well, it's because you're projecting. Not everybody has as much money as you do. I'm not saying you're wealthy. I mean, some people have a lot more money than you do, and some people have a lot less money than you do.
No. But what I'm saying is, like, I don't think someone who has an iOS device and wants to use Spotify, I don't think this is stopping them from getting a Spotify subscription.
Or
I don't think Spotify's losing a sale because they can't do an in-app purchase inside Spotify for the subscription.
Well, okay, but someone doing comparison shopping, and there's going to be a lot of people who are doing comparison shopping. So, yeah, Spotify has its own fans. As a matter of fact, Spotify's hardcore fans are probably going to go buy outside the app.
Or RDO or anybody else.
But anyone doing any comparison shopping, if they're looking at the in-app prices, if you're comparing $12.99 to $9.99, that's going to be a decision maker for some people.
Maybe I don't know who's doing. I just figured none of these guys are doing in-app subscriptions. Am I wrong on that? Does Spotify do in-app and just charge more?
Yeah, they charge $12.99.
Oh.
Which, again, you know, what is Apple's cut on $12.99?
Right. No, I mean, so they're losing a little bit.
So Apple's cut is $3.89.
But I mean, that's Spotify's choice, though, too, right? I mean, they don't have to do that.
Spotify gets $9.10 for a $12.99 subscription, which is still a competitive disadvantage to Apple, which gets the full $10.
Right, but
that's of course minus processing fees, although Apple eats those processing fees, whatever. I think that you're mistaken. I think that there are lots of people for whom this will be a real issue. Plus, the majority of people aren't streaming yet. There's a lot of people still to come into the streaming camp, and a lot of them are going to be brought in by Apple Music. And, you know, when they're doing those comparisons, some of them are going to choose based on price.
But again, I just, why wouldn't Spotify just throw up a page that says, hey, the subscription is $9.99 if you go to Spotify/subscribe, you know, here.
Well, Spotify has done that outside the app, but Spotify is not allowed to do that inside the app.
No, I know they can't even throw up a text URL that's not linkable and just say, hey, here's where you go to subscribe. I mean, if Apple's pulling it that far, then I think they have a problem.
I don't know. Well, see, okay.
I know they can't do a link.
They cannot do a link whatsoever. That'll get the app rejected. I don't know if they could put up a. An unclickable URL. But either way, it still represents a big competitive disadvantage compared to Apple, where you can purchase stuff right there. And let's actually talk a little bit about why Apple does this, because I think this is important. The 30% that Apple is taking stems from the fact that Steve felt like we need to, that we deserve a little cut from everything that's happening on the App Store. It's our App Store. We're the one who's providing this amazing platform. It's about time we made some money from it.
Sure.
And at the same time, and this, I think, might even be the more important. It's not like I know what the executives are actually thinking. This is all my outside speculation. But Apple also wants to protect the integrity of the purchase process. That's why Apple keeps, that's probably even the bigger reason why Apple keeps app developers from linking to outside purchasing options. The idea is that when you're in an app that you have downloaded from the App Store and you are making a purchase, you are protected. You know what's going on. Apple can control the purchasing process. Apple can control refunds. Apple can control the experience. And all of, you know, everybody's protected. The app developer's protected, the consumer's protected, and Apple's protected. And that is the reason why Apple is doing all this stuff. The problem is that there are ripple effects. For instance, in my opinion, the iPad should be the best shopping platform on the planet. So shopping on Amazon in a hybrid native app that's pulling data from the web with native calls, that should be the best way to shop on Amazon. But you can't, because Apple requires all of Amazon's purchases to go through Apple's payment system, where Apple is taking 30%. And guess what? There's no retailer on the planet that has an extra 30% lying around, let alone a company like Amazon that doesn't make any money in the first place.
Well, but wait, that's not true.
What do you mean?
I mean, the Amazon app, Apple's not taking a cut of their revenue when you buy through the Amazon app.
Wait, can you shop on Amazon app now?
Oh, yeah. It's fabulous. It's probably, just like you said, it is the best way to shop on Amazon. I prefer it much more to the website. Yeah.
Okay.
I do it all the time.
Okay, well, first of all, I may end up having to delete all this so that our listeners don't know what an idiot I am. Let's see here. I am checking this out. Amazon. Shop Amazon. You need toothpaste, blah, blah, blah. It's easy to navigate. All right. Well, that's as it should be. I didn't realize that Apple had relaxed that.
Now you can't do Kindle stuff.
Yeah, because again, there's no 30% there. You know, when Apple made...
But online shopping, I mean, you can use Target the same way, right? And Target's even better for Apple because now they do Apple Pay. So I think Apple does get some sort of kickback on that. I don't know if that's ever been confirmed, right? They get some sort of kickback
Apple
from
gets
the bank.
A small percentage from Apple
Pay. It's like 10 cents per $100 or something like that. Or 1 cent per $100. I can't remember.
So if I go, you have done this. You've given money to Amazon through the Amazon app?
Yeah, I do it all the time. I order stuff all the time through the app.
All right. Well, I'm an idiot. And
I never plug in my credit card, to be honest, because it's like on one click. So maybe that's the workaround?
No. Well, Apple had to have allowed that. At one point, you couldn't do that. So it's some. I honestly, I just missed it, and I apologize for exposing my idiocy to our listeners. But so, all right. So I need to.
Yeah, but I definitely have ordered from Amazon on my phone and on my iPad. No doubt about that.
All right. Well, that's as it should be. I'm glad that Apple saw my wisdom.
I never plug in my credit card info, though, because Amazon already has it.
All right. So our listeners now know that everything I say is suspect.
Are you going to edit that part?
No, of course not. No, I always say we're going to edit stuff out, but we leave it in. The only thing, you know what we edit out, Adam? We edit out coughs, mic bumps, desk bumps, cats jumping on your lap and you scream. That's the kind of stuff I edit out. Always say I'm going to edit out the stuff where we look like idiots, but I leave it in. It's a David Letterman thing, you know? So, look at that right there. Purchase for your subscriptions. All right. That's good. I'm glad. That's
but
as it should be. There was a time when that wasn't actually the case. So yeah. Apple changed that policy and honestly, I passed it by. But if you look at stuff like streaming content,
yeah, anything that's a subscription still falls under those rules.
And there's no money baked into that. I mean, you know, companies like Spotify don't make any money as it is. They don't have that 30% to kick around. And again, notice that by raising the price 30%, they're still actually making 9% less. They're bringing in $9.10 for a $12.99 subscription, and 9% is again a very, very competitive disadvantage to Apple, who's getting the full $9.99 for Apple Music.
Yeah. Okay, so this leads very nicely into the question that I had for you regarding this. Because there's some rumors and some finagling, you know, or discussion that Netflix just started doing in-app subscriptions through the Netflix app. And I believe they're at the standard pricing.
Okay.
And so there's some people that are postulating this theory that they worked some sort of back deal with Apple because of recent Apple TV stuff and their relationship with Netflix and having Netflix on the platform.
Well, so we have...
I mean, if you're big enough, can you get around this? And is that good?
Well, I think that Google has actually already supplied the answer. Because if you look at Google Play, there are exemptions for developers that are doing streaming content. And that's all Apple has to do to solve this particular problem. And, you know,
you're saying not take the fee, or are you saying...
I'm saying not take the fee, especially if Apple is a competitor.
Well, and so what I'm asking is if it turns out they did that with Netflix and are giving special treatment there, does that make this whole thing currently, the way it sits with the FTC, worse for Apple?
So the FTC is never going to sue on this because they're not going to have to. Apple will change this policy before the FTC sues. As soon as the FTC makes it clear that they're going to sue, if it comes down to that.
You think so?
Yeah, Apple. Yeah, absolutely. Because Apple will lose. Apple will lose a suit here.
Yeah.
If the FTC wants to take this particular case to court, it's because the FTC thinks it can win. I'm not saying that the FTC is infallible, but I'm saying that they're going to have a foundation for their complaint.
And how is this?
Go ahead.
How is this not different than them backing down on iBooks?
Who backed down on iBooks?
No one did. That's what I'm saying. Apple didn't on iBooks. Why would they on this?
It's a completely different case.
Because it's Cook instead of Steve.
Not at all. It's Tim Cook and Eddie Cuer are still angry about the DOJ case.
Right.
And it's a completely different case. Apple was accused of, convicted of being the ringleader of a conspiracy to raise prices.
Book prices.
And that is a completely different complaint than Apple's internal structure allowing the company a competitive advantage over others.
Gotcha.
And like I said, so Google has already shown us the way here. It has exemptions for developers that are doing streaming content. And ironically, Apple will be benefiting from that when it releases Apple Music for Android. So Apple will be on the same playing field as Spotify and Pandora and all the competitors when it goes to Android.
When they're on Android, yeah.
So I mean, it's the solution here is easy. It's clear. It's simple. Just make an exemption for the streaming content. The margins don't exist. Yeah, you know, at the very least, Apple could the exemptions could cover credit card processing. So Apple could, for instance, could still allow Spotify, for instance, to use Apple's payment system for subscriptions and just charge the credit card fees.
Make them still pay the credit card processing fees,
which is reasonable.
That's recuperating costs. I mean, yeah. No one's gonna let you process credit card payments for free.
Yeah, Apple.
They'd have to pay that anyway.
Spotify would have to pay that anyway. And you know, Apple. There's no reason that Apple shouldn't have to eat those costs. But you know, again, before Apple entered the market, and of course, Apple was sort of in the market because it still owned Beats. But you know, come on, Beats Radio didn't have any market share. So, I mean, you know, and everyone knew that something was coming. So I don't think Beats really counts because no one cared about it. But when in this market, everybody's on the same playing field, you know, Pandora's having to pay the same 30% or charge more as Spotify and iHeartRadio and on and on and on. And this is only an issue now because Apple is now competing with these people. and it is an unfair advantage. Makes Apple look bad. Doesn't make any sense. And those margins just don't exist. Apple should know those margins don't exist because it's in the business. So change it.
Yeah.
It's easy. Easy fix. Do what Google's doing. This is one of those times when Apple should copy what Google's doing.
Yeah, I get a sense it's not going to go as quietly as maybe you think it is, but
oh, I think it's just gonna be, you know, one day Apple changes it. Because I mean, there's not only a weight of law issue here with the FTC possibly suing. There's just the fairness aspect. It's not fair for this is an unfair competition. And as the holder of the platform, I think that Apple has a certain responsibility to compete fairly.
I understand what you're saying, and what you're saying makes sense to me. It's just historically that's not how Apple behaves.
Well, Apple changed, as we just recently pointed out, Apple right. changed this policy for in-app purchases for...
Well, they change policies all the time. I mean, yeah. It's not to say Apple doesn't change, but... Yeah, again, maybe this is the thing that forces their hand. I was going to say, you know, very often their hand has to be forced.
Well,
and maybe this is the force.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the FTC investigating this is going to force it. But I would imagine Apple already knows that it needs to change this.
Oh, sure.
They probably knew even before they launched it.
They know there's tons of things they need to change, but they don't.
But they do change some things. They're changing things. What was
eventually?
God, what was the thing about? I don't know. 6 months ago, there was something that was like really unfair to developers, and Apple just said, "Okay, we're going to do it differently." You're right. What was that? It was something to do with something about the approval process, maybe the app approval process.
Yeah, I mean, and that very much sounds like the whole music royalties thing too, right?
Yeah. Oh,
payments made to artists with Apple Music.
That is a good example. Apple in no way. Apple had an agreement with the labels.
Right.
Apple, that was locked up.
Yeah.
And Apple changed its mind because it was the right thing to do. I think this is a different kind of right thing to do. This is a competitive right thing to do as opposed to, obviously compensating artists is a much,
well, and let's be honest, I mean, even still with the new compensation, it's still not great.
Why's that?
But at least they're doing the right thing. Well, I mean, it's fine within the realm of that's what you get paid for streaming, but you know, again, I don't want to get into a whole other topic this late in the game, but you know,
well, we can. Do you remember that piece I wrote saying that this is kind of like with me in advertising, you can't stuff this
exactly
back into that bottle.
I was gonna pull it back to the same thing. Yeah, so that's why we don't need to go into this because I fully agree with that. But
the consumer has spoken.
Times have changed.
$10 bucks a month is what consumers are willing to pay for music.
Yeah, that's what it's valued at. And you're right; it's exactly the same thing as how the advertising thing is going to go. This is the new way we're doing it, and you need to figure out how to survive within
that's
this.
That's right. Consumers have said they don't want a web page full of ads.
Yep.
And it's up to us to adapt.
Yeah.
All right. Do you think there's anyone else I can piss off for the day? Let's see. I not only made some people mad, I made myself look like an idiot by not knowing this thing about.
Good show.
Yeah, good job. Well done. Gonna have you on more often, Adam.
Permanently banned.
No, man. I very much appreciate it. I very, very much appreciate it. I always like learning. I always like learning what I'm wrong, even when it's in front of tens of thousands of listeners. All right. On that note, though, we are out of time. So I'm going to do this. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO. That's all for this
week. Stay subscribed.
And we'll see you online. We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
We are professionals.
I missed my last line. Sorry.